This is Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis, in for April Baer. COVID-19 has changed a lot of what we consider to be normal, including a system of eviction that strips humanity out of interactions between renters, landlords, sheriff's departments, and the courts. Governor Gretchen Whitmer issued a moratorium on evictions that ended last week in favor of a diversion program. Earlier this year, the University of Washington released a study showing Black renters were 7 times more likely to be evicted than white renters. Here to talk about what eviction looks like for those feeling it most acutely is Bonnie Billups. He's executive director of Peace Neighborhood Center in Ann Arbor. Bonnie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
What does eviction look like for the families that you come in contact with? What are the pieces that generally are a shared experience?
The shared experience is usually fear, figuring out what's going to be next, figuring out how to save what possessions you might have, figuring out how you're going to get your kids back and forth to school, especially if you're going to be living with someone else and it's out of the school district. Figuring out all those pieces, you know, that you would not have to worry about if you were had some kind of stable housing situation.
How does it happen from a sort of timeline perspective? Is it something that happens overnight, or is it something that is eviction a slow process that plays out over months?
Well, it can be a slow process. It depends on how much you're in denial or how much you're working it toward making it not happen. So the process is this, is you, of course, get a letter stating that you owe the rent, you go to court, and the judge will say, okay, you need to pay by this time. So now that time clock really starts ticking, because within this amount of time, you need to, usually within 2 weeks at the most, you need to pay the landlord or you're out. And so if you're someone who is still working every day, still trying to figure out how to come up with this amount of money so that you can maintain your housing, you're waiting to the last moment trying to hold on to the hope that you'll come up with the money and be able to maintain your housing. That's what we find. We don't find people who are just waiting and not trying to put any effort. They're really putting an effort trying to see, what can I do to stop this eviction from happening? And then, of course, at some point, there's a notice put on your door saying you have 24 hours. And with that amount of time, law enforcement and people from the complex that you're renting from will come. And then, of course, the process of removing your stuff is not a pretty one. It's throwing all your stuff in bags and putting it on the side of the road. So those things are not pretty. But the fact that families, the stress of trying to come up with the funds and running from agency to agency or relative to relative to try to come up with the funds to be able to stay in the housing is probably, I would think, the most stressful part of the process.
I called you not long ago after I saw what was clearly a household's worth of possessions on the side of the road and wondered, did you know this family? Did you know anything about the story? Trying to get in contact with the family. And you didn't know about that particular case, but you know, you and I were discussing a little bit. There is an aspect of people descending upon those pieces of property, those memories, those pictures, those pieces of furniture. And people pick through other people's possessions trying to find something that they might need for their own home. When you come upon a scene like that, what goes through your mind about both the items that are being lost, but also the people who gather to pick up those pieces?
Well, I can tell you a story. We had a gentleman who got evicted, and he had worked very hard to try to save his house, and he had become unemployed, and he couldn't find the resources. And they came that morning, and they put all his stuff out on the side of the road on Gulf Side. He was sitting in a chair with his possessions, with his cell phone, trying to make phone calls to get some friend with a truck or somebody with a van to come and grab the things that he wanted to keep, that he could keep. And at the same time that that was happening, when we rolled up on the situation with our van to try to move some of his stuff, people were stopping to pick through his things.
With him sitting there.
With him sitting there. And he was just so overwhelmed with telling people to stop. This is my stuff. He was just so overwhelmed. He was just beaten down at that point in time. So myself and another staff person got out, of course, and we were not very nice to people who were trying to pick through his stuff, and tried to explain to them as forcefully as we could in a nice way that, you know, this is this man's possessions and this is all that he has left at this point in time. You know, it's not appropriate for you to be picking through things while he's there. But I mean, we have to think about the fact that whenever we walk by a pile of stuff that's sitting out, that those were once possessions of somebody, they're now homeless. The majority of those people are homeless with no place to go, or doubling up with other relatives, or on the streets.
Are there any legal mechanisms that protect renters from having their lives strewn about in such a public way when they are evicted?
I don't think there's anything that I know of that stops that part of the process. There are, of course, lots of safeguards to try to stop the eviction process. I mean, there's legal things that people can do, and there's all kind of efforts of nonprofits to assist people. And there are some very great landlords who we work with that we've, you know, been able to call and say, hey, give us an extra 2 weeks while we try to find a solution for this family or for this individual. And those landlords and owners of property have been great with trying to wait to the last moment. I don't think anybody really wants to evict people, but there does come a time when I think landlords are at their wits' end, and there comes a time when families who have done everything that they can to save their housing have no other option but at that point to leave or to be evicted until they find some other solution.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Bonnie Billups. He's the executive director of Peace Neighborhood Center in Ann Arbor. Bonnie, Peace Neighborhood, you have this nice, beautiful community center, but it started in a house that's right next door to the community center. And it's still owned by Peace and serves as a rent-free home for families, one family at a time, who has been evicted or is struggling to get their feet back underneath them. When did the organization know that this would be an important part of the mission and this would be the use for the facility?
Yeah, that program is called Peace House, Peace Transitional House. And it's two units. There's an upstairs unit and a downstairs unit. Thus far, we've had, I think, 19 families go through Peace House. Reason that we started Peace House was because we had a family, a young lady and her siblings who had been evicted three times in a 2-year period. The mom was very successful at talking a landlord into letting them move into a house. And she was worked hard, but she had 5 kids and they needed a larger space. And most of the time she could handle part of the rent, but not all the rent. So it would take 6 or 8 months before she would get an eviction notice. And within, you know, 10 months or so, they would be evicted again. And they would have to go back into a situation where there was domestic violence and until she could find another place. And that situation, we realized that if she had had a place where she could live more than 90 days, where she could work at saving money, where she could work at being able to work at advancement in her job or find the right job that would pay her enough money, or even have the luxury of finding the right housing that she could afford, as opposed to signing something that she knew in her heart of hearts she wasn't going to be able to do, but just so that she could have a spot for her kid. If all those things could be met, what would that look like? And that's how we developed Peace House. We went to all of the local shelters and spoke with all of the directors and staff there. And the model that we came up with a situation where people could stay up to a year, that there is a mandatory savings of their funds, that we don't charge anybody rent or anything, that we help to alleviate the problems that put people in chronic housing crisis. Things like fixing credit reports, like giving people a chance to work a job and get an advancement in that job, working out transportation issues, child care, all of those things that are barriers to, or things that help to create housing crisis is what Peace House was designed to help alleviate. And we can only do two families at a time. And those families end up staying sometimes, the average stay is about 9 to 10 months. But we had one family that stayed 2.5 years if we'd worked on very closely with them on an IRS problem, and they had been in a hotel for 3 years. But that family moved out and has been successful, as with other 17 families. So 18 families total have moved out and been extremely successful and not had any reoccurrence of housing crisis in their lives.
What is that? Essentially, now what you have built up a series of experiences and data, what does it tell you about the ability to stem the tide of evictions?
Yeah, it tells us that the key is to work on the real issue that creates the housing crisis, which makes people get evicted. And so we find that a lot of times those things are, like we talked, I said sort of earlier, are centered around jobs, around parenting issues, around the ability to have transportation to get to a job, the ability to create or to fix things on your credit report so that you can actually move into a housing situation that is fair and not held as a threat over you. Because sometimes the fear is, I have to take this place and it's not where I really want to live, but it's the only place that'll accept me with my credit history. But I know it's not a good place for me to be or for my family to be. So, you know, sort of addressing those issues are the things that we found are the things that make people have long-term success. From our discussions with some of the other shelter programs, family shelters and domestic abuse and individual shelters, the discussion was sometimes 90 days is not enough. A lot of them have restrictions of 90 days and then you need to move on. But that's not enough to fix a systemic real problem that keeps causing a lot of housing crisis.
So Peace is in a generally affluent white community. And a lot of your work focuses on families struggling to make ends meet in the community, many of them Black and brown. How does that disparity sit with you?
I grew up in Ann Arbor. I moved here when I was 8 years of age. And so this has been a community that I'm very invested in. And it's a wonderful city and a wonderful place to live. Washtenaw County is a wonderful place to live. But we know that there's some disparities as far as economics and race, and that what I feel on a daily basis might be different from my white male friends. And so I feel that we all have a lot of work to do, that this community is open to these kind of discussions and trying to figure out what's the next steps. But, you know, we have a lot of work to do. And I think everybody needs to look at the whole thing of implicit bias that we might have and how to address it and to make ourselves aware of all of those things.
As we continue or see this surge in a national dialogue about systemic racism, what is rising to your mind about what you think some of the most important things for people to know are?
I think the first thing to realize is, and to, you know, and I remind myself of regularly that we're only 50 years into the Civil Rights Act of this country. It's not like this country has forever had laws or ways to support equality And so the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, those things were just in the 60s. So, and this country has, you know, a history of hundreds of years. And most of those hundreds of years were not pleasant years for people of color. And so we're really in our infancy of trying to bring real equality to all people in this country and to live up to the Declaration of Independence. My hope is that in my grandkids' lifetime, that, you know, as we've seen progress in my lifetime, that by the time my grandkids have kids, that we would have solved this issue of race and economic and class differences. And that the United States would even be a, would really be an example to the rest of the world of how it's done.
You also serve a great population of youth and kids. When you work with them, you came, you yourself as a youth or as a teen went through Peace Neighborhood Center in the 1970s. What do you think about the power to, I don't know, change a generational response? You're talking about just a few decades that you've been talking about. People, I guess what I'm trying to say is like that the way that people feel about their society around them sort of shifts on a generational basis. So if that holds true, what do you see in the kids that are coming up right now and their ability to process where we are in American history?
Despite some of the negative things, I see a lot of hope. I see a lot of great possibilities. I see the foundations for change. I see and believe that we will get to the to that point that we're supposed to be of the oneness of all human beings and oneness of humanity. And I feel that, I know that, and I see that with the kids that I work with and the kids who I come across. But I think it's important for them to understand the historical context of things so that they, as they grow to be leaders and they grow to be the adults in this community, and they grow to be the people who are sitting at Thanksgiving dinner with their families, that they can correct the ignorance of their older aunts and uncles and grandparents and help to guide them toward this new complete love for humanity the way it should be.
Bonnie Billups, Executive Director of Peace Neighborhood Center in Ann Arbor. Bonnie, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.